Osiris.
Across the Margin, the podcast is a show that brings you in-depth interviews with notable authors, artists, musicians, activists, filmmakers, and introspective eccentrics of all kinds, diving deeply into topics that demand deeper examination and illustrating the notion that there are captivating stories to be found everywhere. Across the Margin, the podcast is proudly in the loop.
Hey friends, you're listening to The Road to Now, which means that you like to listen and learn. Well, what if I told you there was a way that you could just go to another place and not just get a podcast, but get books that would do it the same way? Ladies and gentlemen, one of our sponsors, Libro.fm, is an audiobook company that lets you purchase audiobooks directly from your local bookstore. You can pick from more than 100,000 audiobooks, including New York Times bestsellers, recommendations for booksellers around the country, and we've even got a Road to Now playlist there, so you can find books by our previous guests, including Jefferson Cowie, Edward Baptist, so many great authors. I listen to books all the time on Libro, and I just love it. One of the things that I do is I love listening to novels, right, to fiction. I don't spend a lot of time reading fiction, but when you get a book written by one of the great authors, a lot of times they read them themselves and have other voices. So I listen to B.J. Novick's One More Thing, which is one of my favorite pieces of fiction and short stories that I've read in forever. And I loved it so much, I got it so I could listen to B.J. Novick read it. And it was like a whole new experience. So you can go to Libro.fm and you can use our promo code RTN. And with that, you'll get 3 months of audiobook membership for the price of 1 month, which means that for just $15, you'll get 3 months, one book a piece, and you'll get yourself a big book if you want to. You know, you can get a whole month out of something like a Grant biography or Washington biographies. So that's, if you love what we're doing and you love your local bookstore, please support us and go to Libro.fm. That's Libro.fm. Enter the promo code RTN and join us there. We hope that you'll support them. As I said, I was a member of Libro before. We picked them up as a sponsor. I actually approached them myself and said, will you sponsor us? Because I love their model. So go check them out. You can go to Libro.fm or you can go to our episode page. There's links on every one of those. Check them out. Thank you guys for supporting us and enjoy this episode.
I'm Bob Crawford.
I'm Ben Sawyer.
And this is the Road to Now 3rd anniversary episode.
Live from New York.
Live from New York and Rogers, Arkansas.
The New York City of Arkansas.
Well, Ben, it's our 3rd anniversary episode, and we went large with our guest. We went big.
We did.
You know, people were wondering, who would it be? Would it be maybe former FBI Director James Comey? He's making the rounds. Would it be him? Nope. What about legendary singer-entertainer Diana Ross? No, our very special guest is our old friend Matt Negrin.
Hello, everyone. It's good to be back. Talking to you for the first time today, as far as anyone else knows.
It's great to have you, Matt. We're so glad that you could rearrange your schedule to be here today.
Oh, I'm more than happy to structure my entire life around maintaining my grip on the most appeared guest record of Road to Now. I do want to apologize for my voice. It's a little raspy because Ben and I did karaoke last night, and also because I spent the last 50 minutes arguing with you about something that will never air because it was not fit for broadcast. We did an entire podcast episode that Bob just deleted because he was like, this is too toxic for the discourse. I am not joking. We covered so many great things, and now no one will ever hear it.
I didn't delete it. It's in the it's in my iPad.
Russia, if you're listening, if you can hack. The world needs to hear it. I won't say what it was about. People can figure out what it's about.
Well, why don't we give them the highlights? For those of you who know, for those of you who know, and I'm sure most of you don't, Matt Negrin has a long-standing, one-sided argument going with CNN's Chris Saliza. Is that right, Matt?
That's right, and that's all we need to say about it. That's it.
And
people can go online for more.
And I took Chris's side, I guess, just saying that it's okay for Matt to have criticisms of Chris, but he needs to elevate the dialogue of that's the fair. Criticism. Correct?
That is a fair summary of your point.
And yes. Then Matt criticized me for believing in God and said that we don't have souls. That's pretty much it, right? That's the high.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. You laid out an eloquent, one would say almost like a 95 theses of why I should elevate the discourse. And then I came back with, there is no God, you idiot. And that was it.
Which pretty much proved my side of the argument. Then there was this long, awkward pause. And then I played the beginning of Claire de Lune. And here we are.
And that's literally the road to now.
That's literally it.
But Ben was there, right?
Yep.
What was Ben saying the whole time?
Ben tried to take us off topic several times and we wouldn't let him.
Let me say this. If we can get 100 new patrons in the next 2 weeks, we will release for our patrons a slightly redacted version, of that conversation.
We will, no, you know what we should do? We will release William Barr's summary of what it is.
Yes.
And people can draw their own conclusions based on what he says those 48 minutes and 29 seconds were about.
You know, that was my summary of what happened. And that's my summary of what happened.
I mean, he's the attorney general. You're not going to believe him? He's the attorney general. He's obviously credible.
The entire conversation was just one large praise for Donald Trump the entire time.
And who are we to know? We didn't. I don't know. Even though I was part of it. If he says so, I have no reason but to believe him.
So Matt, tell me about your weekend with Ben.
Ben's here, kind of getting away from his family. I mean, experiencing what New York has to offer. Got him a spot. Ben's a stand-up, as all listeners know. So I got him a spot at a comedy club in Astoria tonight. And we just been hanging out, kind of like doing Matt's version of New York. So we went to some great places I like to go. It's a place called Barcade. We get craft beer.
Wait, and two Barcades.
Two Barcades. One near my neighborhood, one in Manhattan. I'm in Brooklyn. They got old retro video, like cabinet arcade games from the 90s. Great craft beer. We went to Joe's Shanghai, which is a soup dumpling place in Chinatown that I have a personal connection to through my family. That is just like a wonderful story and place I love. We had soup dumplings there. We did a lot of karaoke last night, and amazingly, and this was like one of the weirdest things ever, one of my friends last night brought a coworker whose name is Matt Negrin. So there was another Matt Negrin out there in the universe, and I met him. We met each other last night, and it was incredible. We're like the same height, same shoe size, same, you know, other stuff. We checked, and we were like finishing each other's sentences. It was wild. We have the same Greek heritage, back to the same city. Our grandparents were Greek Jews. Our grandparents came from the same city. It was wild. Yeah, it was actually like a really bizarro moment. Like, we're very, very similar, with just like a few minor differences. It was
right.
Like,
we right. Kind of look. He believes in God, and is a big fan of Chris Saliza.
He's a rabbi who only follows Chris Saliza.
Well, Ben, tell me about your experience shacking up with Ben on his couch.
He's staying on an air mattress.
I'm staying on an air mattress. I'm staying on an air mattress. I'm staying on.
That's right. The first
air mattresses.
One, yeah, first one deflated.
Yes, and then I just sleep on the couch. I've slept on. Matt Negrin has a very tall, handsome apartment.
Thank you.
In Brooklyn. It has a rooftop. Mm-hmm. It's been great.
We hung out there a lot.
Negrin is, as you, I don't know if we ever talked about this in podcasts, but Negrin has come and stayed with me a couple times in Nashville. And the last time,
frequently,
he just stayed at my house while we were in North Carolina. I just gave him the keys to the truck.
It was amazing.
It makes me very happy. So I'm glad to be here, cashing in on the points that I've attributed.
We have an identity sharing agreement where I can steal Ben's identity while he's gone in Nashville, and I get to drive his truck and stay at his house and sleep with his wife. And when Ben stays with me, he gets to do it.
whatever he wants here.
I get to stay here. I get to ride the subway that Matt Negrin rides to work every day. And I get to go in there and cuddle up with the anime pillow that he sleeps with.
That's true. It's a Japanese comfort pillow and it never complains.
Yeah, so it's been cool. I got to see my friends Adam Capitani and my friend Rhiannon Dowling.
Ben invited his friend over. We had a little game night. I love to host game nights. I have like 40 board games and I have people over all the time to play them. So Ben invited his friend over. We played some games with some other people too. It was very fun. Very like innocent fun.
We went on a walking tour of the Lower East Side, which was awesome.
Yeah, so the Tenement Museum in New York is my favorite museum. And I've been over a dozen times. It's an old tenement house that they preserved, I think in the 70s or 80s they found it. It hadn't been lived in since the 30s when the fire code changed and the landlord basically kicked out all the tenants because it was cheaper to kick them out than to change the banisters to be fireproof. So this museum is preserved in such a beautiful way where you can see like the wallpaper, like 20 layers of wallpaper in each apartment. You learn all about the people who lived there, the Irish who were discriminated against, the Germans who ran a pub in the basement, the Jewish immigrants who sewed dresses, other sweatshop workers, all these different tours. But the one we did 2 days ago was, wait, 2 days ago or yesterday?
2 days ago.
2 days ago. The one we did 2 days ago was a walking tour of the Lower East Side, which was really cool for me, especially because, which I had never done this before, that's where my grandparents grew up. So they were from this city in Greece, and then they didn't know each other, I think. Yeah, they didn't know, they were so little. They moved here from the same town and met in the Lower East Side in New York. And it's like, they lived two blocks from the Tenement Museum. And so we're walking around this neighborhood and the whole time I'm like trying to imagine like what it's like to be my grandparents as children, like walking around in this place. And a lot of the buildings are still kind of there. They talk about how the buildings were Astor, who built some of the buildings, who was like this very rich real estate developer, and a lot like Astoria is named after him and Astor Place is named after him. Went to these places where like high rises started replacing the tenements, and it's just very, very interesting. So the point is we fit some history in on this.
That is awesome. I'm about to begin an urban history class in my master's. So this is just exciting to hear. I want to come and see that museum for sure.
Bob, your urban history class is like, I took an urban history class in grad school at App State from John Williams, who's an amazing historian. He wrote the book on West Virginia, but he's also like specialist in urban history. He worked for the federal government for a long time before he came back into academia. But I remember the semester before I started grad school and took that class. I went in a month long backpacking trip around Europe, just like started in Athens and ended up in London. And then I took a semester and took that class. After that, I went back to Europe for another 3 weeks after the end of that semester. And every city was so much cooler to me than it was before. Like, you think about space, you think about the way that buildings have meanings, that what you look at is like, oh, that's an interesting design. There's a politics to it. There's a reason to it. And as spaces and change, it's fascinating. It's like the, you know, something that, you know, we have a lot of listeners in North Carolina. If you've been to Myers Park in Charlotte and you've screamed about how every road is a Queens Road, and you've been like, who designed this? Why would they do it? It was designed by a turn of the century urban planner named John Nolan. And John Nolan deliberately designed the city to be like that. Because at the time it was built, there were streetcars and people were kind of coming into this area. Myers Park was outside the city, which is crazy to people right now because it's right in the middle of Charlotte. But at that time it was outside the city. And the idea of making roads like that were a way that if you weren't from there, you wouldn't understand where you were. It was a way of essentially like not gating a community, but kind of segregating it off in a way that you really, if you weren't from there, you would stand out because you would have to ask people because there's so many Queens Roads. But you know how it is. Like if you live in a neighborhood, you don't think I'm going to walk up to this road and take a right and walk up this road, and take a left. You just walk to where you're going. It's so fascinating, man.
Yeah. I moved to Charlotte, North Carolina in 1996. And before cell phones were popular and before we all had one, and I was a production assistant. So here I was coming from South Jersey, dropped in the middle of Charlotte, being told, go here, get this, be back in 5 minutes, hurry up, and just with a roadmap. And how confusing Charlotte was where you're on one street, you go through a light, it's suddenly it's a different street. You don't know, yeah, you don't know Queens Road from Queens Road from Queens Road.
Yeah, but realizing that that was intentional is like fascinating and understanding the logic behind it. So I look forward to like finding out what you're reading, and maybe we should do a history on like just on urban history theories.
You could call it Roads to Now.
Oh, Streets to Now.
I was sitting on that one for a minute.
We are happy at the Road to Now to announce that we are back on board with La Cosecha Coffee Roasters, the fantastic business out of St. Louis. We can't tell you how much we love this coffee. If you're looking for just great coffee to have at your house, I don't know if you're like me, I don't drink much coffee, but I do love to have a cup of coffee every once in a while. And when I do, I want it to be good. And so that's why I order myself from a bag of coffee from La Cosecha, have it shipped in. It's always fresh. It stays fresh for a long time. Grind up those beans and have a nice warm cup of coffee. And it's worth it. God, it's so good. And so Bob's had it. Bob loves it. We all love it. We love the business model, which is very connected to the communities that grow the coffee. And we just want to encourage you guys to go support these folks. You can go to La Cosecha Coffee Roasters website. That is lacosechacoffee.com. That's LACOSECHACOFFEE.com. Or you can go to the episode page for this episode and click the link there. If you go there and you enter the promo code RTN10, you get 10% off your next purchase. You support us. You support a great company in La Cosecha. And you get some delicious coffee, which is probably what you wanted in the first place. So I can't tell you how great the coffee is. We're so happy and proud to have them as a sponsor. So please go check out La Cosecha Coffee Roasters. Give them a shot. I suspect you will continue to purchase coffee from them once you taste how delicious their coffee is and know that your money is going to a company that supports the farmers who grow the beans. So go check out La Cosecha Coffee. Thanks.
Matt, it's been great having you on over the years because we've, you know, we met and you worked at Bloomberg, and now you're at The Daily Show, and, you know, we've seen your career grow and expand. Tell us what you're doing at work right now. I know you recently got a promotion and how things are going over there at The Daily Show.
Thanks, Bob. That's so nice of you. Yeah, I mean, I love it. Like the short story is it's great. It's allowed me to do all sorts of creative things that I love outside of the boundaries of traditional journalism, especially kind of more as we, I feel like it, like we've all kind of been focused in the past 2 years on the role that Fox News plays in shaping like the way that we consume news. Whereas before Trump was elected, Fox News was this fringe outlet, this like kind of like we know what, you know, they're just appealing to this certain type of right winger. But now because the president is obsessed with them and tweets their stuff, everyone has to react to them. So we've been watching a lot of Fox News, and it has a corrosive effect on the brain. But at the same time, it's incredibly revealing. And one of the things that we do at The Daily Show is we have that I've been working on is the Donald J. Trump Presidential Twitter Library, which we've been taking around the country. It's basically like, you know, Trump's not going to have a presidential library because it doesn't read, but he would have a presidential Twitter library. And so it's just a collection of his tweets. And we don't just put his tweets up. We curate them. We write about them. We frame them in like the context that is worthy of this president. And one of the projects that I've been working on has been how he just tweets the words that are on Fox News. So I spent a lot of time watching Fox News and then watching Trump's Twitter feed, matching up what he says with what's on the lower third, the Chyron on the bottom of the screen, because he just doesn't think critically. So like they're the most random things. He'll just tweet the graphics that are on Fox. So I know it's weird to be like, yeah, mom and dad, thanks for paying for my college where I got a degree in journalism. And now I watch Fox News all day and work on this thing where Trump tweets what's on television. But I do hope it's like at least a little bit informative. Honestly, the truth is that people go to this museum or we turned it into a book also. It's if anyone out there wants,
the book is wonderful. I have the book at home. It's,
thank
it's
you.
Great.
Yeah, I loved working on that book. If anyone out there wants to buy it, you can get it at dailyshow.com/book. It's called The Donald J. Trump Presidential Twitter Library, The Book. It's just basically like the best parts of this museum that we've put into the book. But it's been a really wonderful experience seeing people realize how crazy he is, not just through the Fox News thing, but like how unhinged he is on Twitter and how bad he is at spelling and like making normal arguments and contradicting himself, like not just over the years, but sometimes in the same tweet. Like it's just wonderful. So anyway, that's kind of what I've been working on for a while.
So Matt, you're completely immersed in the 24-hour news cycle because that's part of your job. Do you find that it is it having, you said it, there was this corrosive effect on your brain from watching so much Fox News. How do you deal with, how are you coping with that? I could see it, you know, I know I get depressed, you know, I take in a lot of news myself, and I've actually tried to back off recently because I could see the corrosive effects it was having on myself and on my attitudes toward things. Do you notice that in yourself?
I think that I do not get depressed, but I have, you know what, did you ever read that story about how the Facebook moderators were there? There's like these group of people who work at Facebook whose job is to monitor conspiracy theory websites like the Flat Earthers, like QAnon, Pizzagate, like 9/11 truthers, whatever, all the crazy conspiracy theories, because social media allows anyone to say anything. And like, people are drawn to these things because whatever, a bunch of reasons. The moderators started believing these things, not because they weren't intelligent, but because they just saw so much of the content. And it's this banana story that like even the people who are trained to separate fact from fiction started like believing some of the things. I feel that from watching Fox News so much, I don't believe it, but I can predict like what they're going to say. I can see like when Trump says this, I can already see in my mind how Fox is going to like spin it. There was this great moment when the New York Times came out with their big story about how Trump misled the business, like investors in the IRS, whatever, with like lost $1 billion through his business dealings and like right on his taxes, like all the shady stuff he did that was like probably illegal and like obviously fraud. And he's been lying about this and saying he's a good businessman, whatever. So the New York Times comes out with a story that he lost $1 billion over the years. And Fox and Friends, Ainsley Earhart on Fox and Friends says, it's amazing when you read this story, it's so impressive all the things that he's done with his life. And it was so next level. It was a cosmic iteration of the apparatchik nature you have to be working at that network to say, this guy who's obviously a fraudster is so impressive for doing things. That to me is like, yes, I was not surprised by that. It was beautiful in its own way, like how they can do that. So personally, I do not feel that I've become like depressed. And when I say like it's corrosive, I mean like sometimes I feel like my brain is rotting from watching these things, but it's seeped into my head so much that like even the 24-hour news cycle, like I'm kind of addicted to it. I'm kind of like addicted to breaking news. Like I love reacting to news. Part of our job at the Daily Show on the digital team is to like put out content in response to breaking news. So it's very exciting when breaking news happens. Like there was this period during the early stages of the Mueller investigation when it was like James Comey is fired. Jeff Sessions is recusing. Mueller is appointed. The Don Jr. emails are coming out. Don Jr. leaks his own emails where he admits to committing treason. President Trump lies about the meeting, like all this stuff that was just like bombshell after bombshell. And like, that was highly addictive. We will never probably get back to this point where news happens so quickly.
Hopefully.
I mean, I kind of love it. Like, I think if Trump loses and we get back to like a whatever you want to consider a more normal version of the presidency, it won't be as leaky and it won't be as corrupt. So there won't be as many bombshells. There won't be New York Times and Washington Post volleys over exclusives. It'll just kind of go back to what it was under Obama and under like Bush without like the whole WMD thing. It'll be like, oh, these are just kind of like normal intrigue stories. Like,
here's how Warren G. Harding.
Yeah, it'll be, yeah, right. Here's how the president arrived at his decision, whatever. And I think like that might be a little, that'll be like the come down from this crazy meth high we have from news in the Trump world, which I don't want anyone to think that I am like admiring of Trump in any way. I'm just saying that like a weird side effect of him, of like this incredibly incompetent buffoon and corrupt person with a corrupt staff that's all vindictive and leak, every single one of them leaks to the press. A side effect of that is that we just have so many stories to react to, and we know so much about what's going on that it's like, it's really addictive.
I agree with you. It is highly addictive. And I wonder if we do go back with or without Trump, we go back to what we considered being normal prior to Trump. I believe it would be something different. It'd be something else. It may not be as toxic or as, you know, the next president that's not Trump will have a lot of leeway.
Well, I don't actually think so. I think Republicans are going to go back to their bad faith arguments. And as soon as, like, honestly, if the next president, if a Democrat wins and, like, you know, at some point in office, he decides to go play golf instead of meeting with someone, Republicans are going to be like, why is this president not working? We elected him to work and he's out there playing golf. They will make that argument in a non-ironic way, unashamed, because they know that there's a, like, half of America will hear that version of that argument and be like, yeah, that's right. I hate when Democrats do the thing that my guy did. It just works. We have a really dumb country that believes anything they want to believe to fortify their opinions on the right. And like, that's the effect of Fox News. We don't have that on the left. We don't have a version of Fox on the left. Fox is so good at this, and like watching this stuff is amazing. A really great example of this was the Kavanaugh hearing, where you had a credible woman say that she was sexually assaulted by this guy. And on Fox News, they pushed this weird conspiracy theory that she was assaulted, but not by Kavanaugh. It was by someone else who like maybe looked like him, or like she just forgot because she was, you know, drinking and whatever. And like, even though she wasn't, that theory prevailed. That conspiracy theory prevailed on Fox News. That got pushed all the way to the president and then down through whoever he talked to, and that won out, and now he's a Supreme Court justice. That is the effect of a fringe propaganda state TV's like self-censored state TV network doing what, like working and working really, really well, because we're not equipped to fight it. The mainstream media is not equipped to be able to say, this is a lie, this is wrong, and we're not going to report on it. Their reactionary approach makes them say, oh, the president says this, here's why it might not be true. Same thing happened with Trump saying Obama wiretapped him. Completely made up. He found out about this from like a random Breitbart story that was like rehashing what Mark Levin, a crackpot right-winger talk radio host, said. Someone put it on Trump's desk and Trump was like, Obama wiretapped me. And then for 2 months, reporters had to be like, Mr. President, do you have any evidence that that President Obama wiretapped you? Knowing that he made it up. But they still had to pretend that he had some semblance of, like, yet they had to give him credence because maybe, because he's the president, he has information that we don't. But that's not the case. He's just listening to like the fringe people on the right. And those people are kind of dictating how we live because we're unequipped to check that.
So some believe that the Kavanaugh hearings cost the Democrats a few Senate seats, that they should have just held their fire on Kavanaugh. He was going to be confirmed anyway, and it cost them maybe Missouri, maybe North Dakota. Matt, do you believe that the Democrats should begin impeachment hearings?
Yes, absolutely. You have to do what's right. And I don't care what the political cost is of this. If the president broke the law, the president is corrupt, the president violated the Constitution, the president has done so many things that are worthy of impeachment, you impeach the guy. And then when you start impeachment hearings, you find out all sorts of other things. You have powers under impeachment that you can investigate, and you put him on trial, and you make all the Republicans in the Senate say, we are okay with the president breaking these laws, and we're not going to remove him from office. That's just what you do.
I agree with you, Matt. Even if it costs the Democrats the 2020 election, I believe that the Constitution is being eroded daily by this administration, and it's the Democrats' job right now to uphold the Constitution, and they have, these powers were given to them for a reason, and they need to do this. It will not succeed. He will be acquitted in the Senate, but they need to uphold the Constitution. Somebody in this country needs to uphold the Constitution.
I don't necessarily buy the argument that failing to remove him from office if he's impeached will embolden him. I think that revealing new things about how bad and illegal his presidency has been would be good for Democrats, because they can say, oh, we got this information that you didn't know before. We got this part that was redacted in the Mueller report. We got his tax returns, like whatever it is. There's stuff there that people need to know. It's not going to come down to just like Democrats want to kill Trump, so I'm not voting for the Democrat. Like, that's such garbage. And I think the Democratic establishment is so boring in the way that they are. Like Nancy Pelosi, sometimes I love her in like a lot of ways, and in the ways that she can manipulate Trump. Like, she is smarter than him, but I really bristle when she does things like it's not politically good for us. Like, yo, that's not your job. Your job is to impeach someone who's broken the law. So just do it. That's why we elected that's why you're the Speaker of the House. That's why you won the midterms. We wanted to hold Trump accountable, and everyone in his cabinet, with the exception of like Rick Perry, is grifting and they're stealing money. Like Tom Price and what's his face at EPA. What was his name? The guy who was like, Scott.
Isn't it funny? You never hear
Scott
about
Pruitt.
Rick Perry.
Scott Pruitt.
Isn't that hilarious? You never hear that guy's name.
Rick Perry is so incompetent, wanted to abolish the agency he's now leading, and has survived solely because he's not doing anything. He's just like, probably comes into work for an hour, like twiddles his thumbs and watches YouTube videos and then goes home.
He's like, well, I've used some energy today, so I've done my job.
I'm not stealing any money, so I'm not going to lose my job. It's great.
But guys, what about Betsy DeVos?
Oh gosh.
No one even mentioned her.
As the parent of a special needs child, I have particular disdain for her and the things that she's trying to do with regards to special education in this country.
Yeah, she's horrible.
And obviously, we'll just leave it at that.
She's obviously a villain. She's a cartoon villain.
All in on no more Betsy DeVos. Oh my God.
So, but Matt. So what does Matt do to Matt Negrin do to relax and decompress and get away from all this?
Bobby should have been there last night. It's literally soup dumplings, video games, and karaoke. That's it. That's
full
like my
Negrin
weekly regimen now.
Is the full Negrin. Our voices are shot. Voices are shot because we sang so many songs.
We really did.
But can I just interject here and say one of the most delightful things about Matt Negrin is that he is appropriately excited about everything.
That's true. I am very excitable.
But no. It's not that you're excitable. You're appropriately excited about everything. Like when something good happens to Matt Negrin, now sometimes like your inclination is to be like, well, you know, it's not a big deal, but you know you're excited about it. Matt's always appropriately excited about it. But he's not like sad. He's not like gloating. He's just as happy as you should be if you've accomplished something. And the same way, it's like, I don't know. He also, this is one of the things I think that we three have in common. Like to spare details, like, you know, Matt Negrin has gotten offered some cool jobs, but he loves his job at The Daily Show and he will stay there. And like, he's been offered some things that by like other standards are like really like we'd be like, wow, that was bigger.
Right.
You make more money.
He was offered editor at large at CNN.
He was offered sub producer at Road to Now. You know, so it's like it makes me happy because Matt Negrin has a job that he loves and he does it because it's the perfect for him. And the same way I feel about MTSU and Bob, you remember, I think we all remember that time that Creed offered you the job as the bass player and everyone was like, go, Creed's the biggest band in America. And you were like, no, I'm going to stay with the Ava Brothers. And people were like, you're crazy. But you know what? Like, we know that you love your job, even though you're not in Creed, you know, and people
Who's
still
Creed.
That's that classic Bob Crawford shade.
Yeah.
I appreciate the flattery.
I must have been listening
flattery
to the Grateful Dead back then when they were popular.
I love the idea of being compared to Bob Crawford on any level.
All I want to do right now is be Bob Crawford, the guy who doesn't know who the band Creed is.
I love how this episode is just the history of like my resume and Bob getting a fake job offer from a Christian rock band.
Wow. When was the last time someone described them as a Christian rock band?
Well, I thought that was how they got started. Anyway, point is, not,
I don't
not
even know who
Creed
they are. Can you sing any of their songs?
Oh,
With arms wide open.
That's with arms wide open.
Matt,
wide
can you sing open any of their songs?
I can't think of any others.
Jitterbug. Jitterbug. I think that's them too.
Bob, do you know what's interesting about your last question was how do I relax? I don't like relax in like the, I don't know if you feel this way, but like there are sometimes when things are just happening so much that I feel like I feel kind of calm, even though like adrenaline is crazy and there's so much going on. That's calming to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's just to take it back to the president. I don't think he's dropped dead of a heart attack at this point because he thrives on the chaos, and that just makes him feel natural and good and puts him in his stasis.
I agree. I agree. He needs to be. Yeah. We have the same problem.
Also, if you love what you're doing and there's, but even if it's like stressful and like kind of like what I do, you know, it can be stressful at times, but if you love it, and if you love the stress, it may be stressful, but it's not bad stress, maybe.
Correct. I love being driven by that stuff. I feel like I always need something pushing me, whether it's like from the, like an external force. And I think a lot of people have been driven by the, like the 2016 election, the marches and the organizations that have sprung up, and like the people who have been driven to activism, friends of mine who have become like activists in their own right because they're like, this is so awful what's going on, that wouldn't have happened. And like, I think external forces can be good to kind of reveal who you are, like spark something in you that's like, yes, this is who I am. I didn't know this is who I was, but now this is who I am.
Right. Because it's being threatened. Because who I am. Because
you took
threatened.
It for granted. You didn't right. realize it was a thing until.
Yeah. And it's the response to that threatening force that's where we need to be careful we don't become what we hate.
Yeah. I feel like at some point in the distant future, or maybe in like 30 years, someone will do a slow burn style podcast about the Trump administration. Oh, yeah. And it'll be so comprehensive and it won't seem real. Like it'll seem completely fake.
And it will be 70 episodes long.
Yeah, no, it'll be like every single corrupt thing, every illegal thing, every nonsensical thing, every weird thing. And it won't make any sense. And people will be like, this could not have happened.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Road to Now. The Road to Now was hosted and produced by Bob Crawford and Dr. Benjamin Sawyer. This episode is edited by Gary Fletcher. Our social media manager is Austin Sawyer. And today's music, like pretty much always, is by the wonderful Paul DeFiglia. As always, also, we'd like to say a special thanks to our supporters on Patreon, with a special shout out to our Washingtonians, Tanya Marsh, Mary Hocking, Paul Ayler, Tim and Caitlin Wells, Fig White, Jeff LeCain, Peggy Donica, and the newest one, Susan Sharp. If you'd like to support us and what we do, you can do that on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/theroadtonow. We're working on some pretty cool stuff over there, so I'm excited to share that with y'all. If you like what you're hearing, please take a minute and rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get The Road to Now. It only takes a second and does a lot to help us spread the word. For Bob Crawford, this is Ben Sawyer. Take care. Osiris.